What is up, Doe? Welcome to part two of the Labor Day Wizard Palooza. This is Adam McGinnis, Pixel and Roll podcast to talk about your Washington Wizards. With me still, he has not left. The wife has not summoned him home. Mr. Truth About It, Kyle Lee Dye. What up, Doc?
What's going on? We're back for a second segment. Ready to talk some Wiz. I'm ready to get reacquainted with this team, share some memories.
Well, you know, we discussed a lot of things here in part one, so thank you for that, for those who are back for part two. Just don't bury the lead. As we discussed this summer about the Washington Wizards, to me, the lead is, it was all about Paul Pierce. And we just, you know, we previously mentioned, and, you know, we went in about, you know, the playoff series and Paul Pierce and what he meant and, you know, of his team and blah, blah, blah. But here he is. He opts out of his option. The Wizards were very interested in signing him. So free agency comes. I remember exactly because ESPN had some terrible, they had a countdown clock going on. They had a countdown clock of the night of free agency, and all these things are leaking, and here's Paul Pierce. And for, you know, what it looked like is that, you know, the Wizards had a shot, and, you know, the Clippers were involved. I think there were some rumors about Boston being involved, and it comes, and it seemed to me that that Paul Pierce's decision was kind of where the Wizards were going to go with their offseason, was what Paul Pierce was going to do. He had an option, and you can talk about the details. It looked like he opted out. Now, people, when I thought he opted out, that meant that he was not coming back, the writing was on the wall. Then, of course, I got lambasted by our friend Ben Standig from Comcast. I'm sure you're listening, Ben, that he could get more money by opting out. I think he could get a couple more million dollars. So the Wizards basically offer him a one-year deal. I think that they did it right at the end. Kyle, before we get into, everyone listening knows what ended up happening, but at that time, July 1st, how much did you think Paul Pierce was coming back? Do you think the Wizards' strategy was correct? They only want 1 year. They could have maybe offered him a second year. Your thoughts on just the whole thing on Paul Pierce on the first day of free agency, because it was kind of a big deal.
Well, for one, I always remember where I was when I heard that Pierce was going to sign with the Wizards. I was actually with the aforementioned Ben Standig. We're covering the 2014 Summer League in Vegas, and I think we were, where it was after a Wizards game. We're trying to, like, you know, distill the game and everything like that, and we're together, and suddenly the ESPN comes on, like, Pierce is signing with the Wizards, and we're like, did we just hear what we thought we heard? And it was sort of fun to transition, like, you know, this is very interesting how Pierce, out of the blue, chose the Wizards after it seemed apparent, like, you know, I don't know, there's no good reason to go back to Brooklyn with their situation. I think, you know, there's always the fact that Pierce chose Washington. Now, maybe that had something to do with the Clippers back in the 2014 summer didn't really have enough money to get them. They had a little bit of issues with the cap. So, one, I'll remember that about Pierce. Then it's all, you know, the season, the playoffs that we just discussed. When he did opt out of his contract, I thought that was, like, the writing on the wall that he was going to go somewhere else, and that was likely going to be with the Clippers. He must have a very special relationship with Doc. And
from LA. Yes.
And
actually around the old Lakers arena, yeah. Not so very far.
Yeah, he had all the reasons to go
back. The Forum, right?
Yeah.
The Forum.
Inglewood. All the reasons to go back to LA. You know, I think recently Doc Rivers was sort of, you know, commenting, like, oh, I think Pierce was going to, you know, Paul was going to choose between Boston and the Clippers. I don't necessarily buy into that. Doc Rivers says a lot of things. I really don't, although Pierce is fond of the Celtics, certainly will always be fond of his, you know, time as a Celtic, winning a championship there. I don't think at this point he would have taken the best combination of money and chance to win. Which is interesting that, you know, the Wizards situation compared to the Clippers, yes, they have, you know, Chris Paul. He's certainly on another level than John Wall at this point, although the gap is closing. You know, Clippers have Blake Griffin, but they're also in the West, so it seems like that is a lot tougher to secure, you know, winning, getting out of the conference to the finals versus coming back with the Wizards. Ultimately, I think that, you know, still having a good chance, Doc Rivers being in L.A. was, you know, enough for Pearson. As soon as he opted out of his contract with the Wizards, I felt that he was no longer going to be with the team, because certainly the Washington wasn't going. Everything's been to be flexible for the summer of 2016. So certainly they weren't going to say, all right,
go to the second year, right?
Yeah.
Like, don't go to the second year.
They weren't going to do that.
It was a bad idea.
You know, as much as Pierce brought to the table, he also was a defensive liability. So I think the Wizards, although that, you know, even Pierce opted out, Pierce became their number one priority. I think it not only to save face, but just to signal like how important he was, it was right to go after him and sort of see what he did first. But I think they even knew that their chance, you know, they didn't have as great of a chance as they thought. So Pierce goes back to L.A. It was interesting that he did it before the DeAndre Jordan thing, and that became a saga.
Yes,
and then,
yes,
you know, Pierce ended up helping recruit Jordan back from...
Go to his house. They're playing spades. They're playing, like, spades with Chris Paul and Doc Rivers.
Yeah, it was all the... You know, we all remember the emoticons, and Pierce, instead of emoticon, he's tweeting a picture of one. So I think that, yeah.
Rocket ship. It was like a rocket ship.
It was
a
rocket ship. Exactly. That was always a fun memory. But, you know, it's not the end of the world that Pierce left, obviously.
I don't think so either.
We want to see how much of the veteran confidence he bestowed upon Wall and Beal. And if that was just him coming in, hitting some big shots, teaching the young kids how to play, if that means that he was sort of what amounts to a mercenary for 1 year, I do think Pierce has scruples, and you know, we're not going to define a mercenary so strictly here. But if he influenced the direction of this team for just 1 year, I think it'll all be worth it. And you know, good luck in LA. I'm not exactly a Clippers fan. I'm not going to root for them for lots of other reasons. It has nothing to do with Paul Pierce going there. But you know, it was overall he was. It remains to be seen how good he was for the team going forward, but you can't discount what he did during this 2014-15 season.
But I legitimately think that the Wizards wanted him to play with them for 1 year for $6 million, correct? I think they did.
Yeah, that is legitimate.
I think they did. And when I look at that, it's kind of like, okay, playoff for Andy Whitman, going Pierce to the four. There's been a lot of ink. A lot of pixels, you know, pixel roll, there's a plug. A lot of pixels being made about how they finally played Paul at the four, and they didn't before. They didn't go small, and we've wrote a million things about it, and all these things. But I don't know if, like, him playing four all the year next year would have been a good thing for the Wizards. And, like, so basically you mean that we have to put him on ice for half the season and then bring him in essentially for the last 20 games of the regular season in the playoffs and hope we get the same kind of playoff Paul Pierce magic. Now, for $6 million, yes, I'm okay with Paul Pierce for one more year, but once again, who's he going to defend on Atlanta? Who's he going to defend for Cleveland? Like, who's he really? They were able to hide him for a long time, and people don't want me to talk negatively about him, but, like, in reality,
these are the facts. Yeah.
These are what, like, if you look how he played, Paul, like, the Wizards actually lost to the Hawks, and aside from the shots, remember, because they could not, because he could not defend Paul Millsap, and there's no one else that could defend Paul Millsap, and so he essentially was on the court playing small, and in Atlanta could go more small. And Paul Millsap is a lot younger, still going to be good in the next couple of years, and maybe or maybe not they don't play Atlanta in the playoffs, but I feel like Atlanta will be one of the teams in the mix. And now Toronto has now got Damari Carroll, and now they're going to go small with Damari Carroll at the floor. So is Paul Pierce going to go guard Damari Carroll? Probably not. Is Paul Pierce going to guard Kevin Love for the Cavs? Probably not. And so if you look at, like, who we want them to beat when we're talking about the elite teams, and we're going to give this at the end of this about the East, but I think that, like, him and his leadership and all that stuff for $6 million, yeah, what's up? But for them to go 2 years, and what ends up going is then the Clippers go 2 years, but they go 2 years for a third option for $6 million total. So then that's also the tell. The tell is what you just said. He was gonna go there no matter what. So yeah, it was never about the money, and it was about, like, he wanted to play by home and wanted to play with Doc, and you know what? And he wanted to play with two of the top 10 basketball players in the world. Name is Blake Griffin, and Chris Paul, like, in their primes. Like, there's no doubt that Blake and Chris Paul are two of, you know, the top 10 to 15 basketball players in the world. So hey, I mean, good for him. I don't wish anything bad. I think his experience, I look back on Paul Pierce, I don't always think anything negative. I think he made a decision for himself. There's a lot of negativity on Wizards Twitter towards him. There's a lot of like wishful thinking. There's people would be like, oh, we don't need him. I wouldn't go that far. But I would just say like, hey, he made a decision for himself, for his family. And I wish him well. And also then Sam Cassell, who did actually, we have to finish on Sam Cassell, who did help recruit him to the Wizards, is now the assistant.
Helped recruit him to the
Clippers and his boy. And I get it. I think that, so.
I'll say two things about Pierce.
Yes.
One is, I have a feeling he had a lot more to do with him not playing four more during the regular season than we want to believe. We want to put it all on Whitman. I almost say like it's even greater than 60%.
Pierce
is doing, not necessarily wanting to preserve his own body. I mean, this is a guy who has that, you know, he brought his like zero gravity or whatever like tank he has to Toronto for the playoffs. Like, he cares about his body.
Yes.
He had something to do with not playing four as much. The other part of him not being with the Wizards now is that you don't have to deal with any sort of controversy like, oh, should Paul Pierce come off the bench? And like, because Otto Porter needs a start, but Pierce is a veteran. Now you just like, okay, Otto, you showed you can step up. You insert him into Pierce's spot, and that's how the team is supposed to progress and develop. You're putting your young guy in. And so maybe it's a combination of a lot of things, but you don't have to necessarily – I think the Wizards are not like – I'm not going to say they're better off without Pierce, but they're okay. You know it.
Yeah.
So I think everyone moves on and sort of goes their ways, and it was a good breakup, if you will, if those do exist.
No, and I think it also tied into the legend of Paul Pierce. I think when you look back at Paul Pierce's career, it's obviously he loves Celtics and things, but he'll always will have that I call game. He always will talk. He'll have talking shit to the whole city of Toronto. Their GM saying "fuck you, Paul Pierce,"
yeah.
And then him coming out, and then they put a Wizards on it on the cover,
the Toronto Sun.
And then game one comes out, and then he goes wild, and then shuts off all the. Sorry for no Canadian people listening, but. Actually, not sorry.
He shot Canada up 2 years in a row.
2 years
he
in a row.
Did the same thing with Brooklyn.
Yes.
And it was cool how he went to the Nets, and they, you remember, they were on the Sports Illustrated cover, and they made all the trades, and they ended up just terrible, and, you know, they were a bust. But it's cool how Pierce himself was after a guy who stayed with the Celtics forever, and then it's like they looked really bad, and is he going to leave? And they brought KG and, you know, Ray Allen in and won a championship. Pierce goes to Brooklyn. That didn't turn out well, but he's still staying relevant and like loves the playoffs and relishes the postseason. So I think you can only and plus a guy his style of play, you can only really appreciate how his career has progressed,
the herky jerky moves. Like,
it's cool that the Wizards were part of his his career. So I think that's definitely it's all a good thing.
And then when I look back, because we're about to transition and segue from Paul Pierce, when I look back too, is that I remember. When I'd ask a couple times after a practice, like someone would ask him questions about, like, you know, he gets it like kids these days. He'd love to be like kids these days, like they're all friends. And he'd go off in these whole rants about, like, it kind of reminds me of like what Barkley says, and oh, we hate each other. Of course, I think it all stems from Michael Jordan being a fucking asshole, and like he didn't want to be. And Larry Bird, I think it all stems from like Larry Bird, and Michael Jordan just being assholes. We're now like LeBron and whatever. Like, let's hang out and be cool, right? like let's be cool and like. But he'd always be like, kids these days, like, they don't know how to talk trash. And I'd be like, well, what do you mean talking trash? He's like, so he'd go off in his whole rant about, like, talking trash. I was like, well, what do you mean? So it was funny, and it's one of these things where sometimes is it a cliche? Is it something that media just, like, manufactures? Nah, man, if you remember, Bradley Beal talking a lot of shit in these playoffs. Talking a lot of shit. You never saw that about Bradley Beal. Talking shit, he talked shit in the Toronto series. He fucking talked shit.
I think
that is a Paul Pierce effect.
Oh, yeah.
I think that is a Paul Pierce effect. And, like, it's not just, like, me or you or the media or in general trying to manufacture that. You saw Bradley Beal, like, fuck you, motherfucker. Or like Bradley Beal, like, go after Jeff Teague, like, being all front. Whereas, like, if you remember, when Kirk Heinrich goes after him, he kind of, like, laughed in his face. Where like, yeah. Not that like two playoffs ago, but now Paul Pierce, I don't know if he lasts in his face now. Like, I think that he might like kind of front, like hold me back kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which, like, you know, and I feel that, but then also feel like that also helped Bradley Beal's confidence of all this. Now, segue.
Yeah, more than any other wizard, you feel that Pierce Beal more than Almir.
No, wizard Wall doesn't. Wall doesn't need that. And like, the thing is, also though, Otto, there was another time where Otto got fouled and talked some stuff after a foul, and then he came and chest bump Otto, and I was like, damn, Otto, like, where did that come from? Now, like, maybe these are just me, just saying that this is it. But like, when I watch these teams, these players, I've never seen that out of them. Where Paul Pierce kind of demands that, or he's talking so much trash and junk and saying this. And plus, it's Paul Pierce; like, he comes with the stature. Whereas, like, this, there's no real other personalities on this team. And Wall doesn't need that. Wall is just Wall. Wall is gonna go all in.
Yeah,
he doesn't need this. But let's segue. So after the free agency, the decision. To me, is the Summer League, right? So they go to Summer League. We talked
mid-July,
about...
Yeah, we go from Pierce to mid-July.
Yeah, to mid-July to Kelly Oubre. So we discussed about Kelly Oubre. So Kelly Oubre comes, him and Aaron White, come with another bunch of guys that, you know, your typical Summer League team. They go out there. Who coached... Kyle, no, you have been to pretty much how many Summer Leagues?
I covered...
Let the people know.
Been to several before as a fan, but I covered like Walls in 2010. Of course, Vesely didn't have one in 2011 because of the lockout.
Yes.
But then we had Beals.
Thanks, Ted, for that. Thank you.
Yeah, we had Beals in 2012. The Jan Vesely Summer League in 2013. And
Hansa, the comeback, right?
Then 2.0. The Otto. He kind of struggled his rookie year, but he came back
second
again.
One, right?
The summer of Hansa, and then. 2014, 2013 was also Otto's first Summer League. But, yeah, this was the first one I haven't covered in a while. And I did miss it.
2014 was the Glenn Rice, the one that went to the finals.
Yes.
Right? That was a really good one. You were there, right?
It didn't make, you know, with the playoffs is sort of at the end of Summer League, I was there for most of the sort of regular games. I didn't cover it this summer. I did miss it a little bit, but I watched I watched all the games pretty intently, and some of them, you know, more than once. And it was, I think, just overall, it was a little bit disappointing because Torrey Murray got hurt, and they sort of counted on him to be a point
Wells
guard.
Right?
Des Wells out of Maryland got hurt, and then they were
shout out to the Terp fans,
and then they were even slated to have Rodrigue Beaubois, who was. You know, used to be up. You know, they used to compare
Seraphine's
him to
French,
Tony
French,
Parker.
French,
yeah,
French brother,
his French guy. But I guess he had personal issues and couldn't join the team. So I think they really struggled with the point guard play and being able to form a cohesive unit. So they didn't look great at times. But what we saw out of Oubre, Aaron White, that was really encouraging.
No, I thought that Oubre really, really struggled with his shot early on, and he struggled. It looked good though, like it was kind of funny. It's like he was never really my first impressions of him. He wasn't really like forcing his looks. Now Summer League, I'm gonna go on a whole rant about Summer League at the end of this, but it's kind of like okay, Summer League is Summer League, right? It's like pick up kind of some defense, kind of people together. You need. Point guard play, if you don't, you're kind of screwed. You got guys fighting for their jobs. You got guys that are rookies coming in really young, and they're the man, and then I gotta like show up, so they kind of try to do too much at times. Sometimes it's very helter-skeltered play.
It can be sloppy, but guys are trying hard.
Yes.
I think even defensively sometimes we don't give them enough credit because guys are fighting for their jobs. But overall, it's just sloppy because people haven't played with each other for a long time.
Totally. I agree. But also, it's still like, man, you go play pickup with some people. You get 10 people out there, you'd be like, yo, man, those two dudes are probably the best people on the court. And so you want your first-round pick to be one of those guys.
Yep.
Right? Like you want to be like, hey, like this game is whatever. We'd be like, yeah, like I just saw a couple moves. I saw some things out of this dude that is very encouraging. Like that's the guy we drafted. Instead of being like, oh shit, he kind of just melted in and didn't even notice him on the court.
It's a capture of what this player is.
I didn't even notice him on the court. Like whether or not that transition, even when he shows out, whether or not that transition to anything productive in the NBA is a whole different ballgame. But so I felt like Kelly kind of showed some things here and there, but really struggled with his shot. But what was most impressive to me, and I think that everyone listening would probably agree that for all these games, was his defense. And I think it was the second game or the third game where just kind of, like he got a couple of steals and locked down. And like even the announcers were like, damn, like deflected, like in the zones, like closing out well and like using his length to his advantage and like actually like taking his defender like where like the help was, which are things that like, you know, like a young dude that's 19 who's getting all this criticism for not having like an underwhelming kind of like career, to just be like, yo dude, like he's 6'8 with a fucking long wingspan on the wing and he's basically kind of locking down this dude. Now he would get some stuff in transition. He ends up, his shot gets up in being better some other better games. Yeah. But I just felt that his defense to me, and we know Randy Whitman, and that's how he's going to play. Now, I'm not going to sit there and say that he's going to get in the rotation, but with Jared Dudley injured, and we're going to go into the signings here in a little bit, I mean, there might be a little glimmer of opportunity from the defensive end.
Right.
That I would, because even if he'd go out and hit 8 threes in summer league, I'd be like, well, I don't know if you're going to get those looks in the later league. But if you go out and you're actually like defending and like, and he was like actually recognizing team concepts at defending, which we know that Randy Whitman is a huge, I mean, that right. is like, that's the Bobby Knight thing of him, like team concepts at defense, like being in the right position at all times. And I felt like, God, if he's already grasping that in a pickup type of environment in summer league, like, wow, like he was more advanced to me on the defensive end than I really anticipated.
That was my number one takeaway. One, he's got like 7'2 wingspan.
He may even measure
shorter, like without shoes. I think I looked up the Draft Express measurements. He may be even like around 6'6 or below without shoes and height, but then he has a 7'2 wingspan. And so, yeah, defense was the number one thing that stood out to me. Like, he is tuned in more than your average player. Now, certainly there are times where he may be falling asleep or can contest a shot or get his hands in a passing lane. But his head was always moving. He didn't get caught watching the ball too much. His head was like an old college coach.
Which John Wall was one of his...
Yeah, that was one of his things. Like, but it's like the coaches say, keep your head on a swivel. So you always have to be
ball
like...
Ball man.
It's
ball
like
man.
Your own
ball
chess
man.
Match.
Ball
it's
man. Ball man.
And he did that. And I think, yeah, he's got to study film. And it's going to be even harder to grasp, you know, more advanced NBA offense. Because summer league offense is not advanced. But the fact that he's like tuned in and focused, at least on being aware of like his position on the court, relation to the ball, especially when he's guarding off the ball, I think that was a good sign. I think if he gets the right development, gets the right tutelage, and he dedicates himself to film study, he's going to be a very good. He's going to be like a, you know, he's Trevor Ariza potential caliber defensive player. So I think you're right. That was a number one takeaway from his summer league experience.
Now, what did you see on the offensive end from him? I mean, I talked about him getting, like, his shot looked good. It didn't go in. But I felt like, what was he, like, dribble drive? Like, what was he like? I felt like sometimes he was, like, really good in transition. And other times I'm like, what the hell did you just do? Like, it was kind of a mixed bag, which you expect in summer league. But like, did you see any type of, like, signs of where, like, wow, like, he really could finish at the rim? Because in the NBA, to me, it's like it's really about hitting a three or being able to finish around.
Finish, you can get to the rim is one thing. Yeah. You got to finish. And I think he showed the ability. He's kind of got a sneaky ability to get to the rim and attack the basket. He likes doing that. I think he's got a talent there. But his issue was that too often times on the first contact from the defender, he would like pull up and try to get a shot or a foul. And you can't do that in NBA. You have to absorb contact and keep going to the basket.
Yeah.
So he's got to learn. I like the fact that he can attack, but he's got to learn to balance how to counteract what the defensive player is doing. In terms of his shot, he was off a lot. He put a lot of shots up, which is good.
Mechanically,
he's a left-hander. I like he went straight up and down, had a fairly quick, you know, held his release. Fairly quick release. I think he might need to get a little bit more lift on his jumper, because again, I mean, he does have long arms, so it depends on, you know, making sure your shot form is not at a low point. But he may can get a little bit more lift, continue to make sure he's going straight up and down, but he has the confidence to take it. It looks nice. It's a nice rotation on his ball. He put up some shots that were maybe ill-advised. You know, that's a summer league. You're supposed to get these game reps. Yeah, you know, and sometimes if he can be more of a catch and shoot, because he'll be getting the passes from Wall, then you can see, okay, once he gets used to that catch and shoot sort of play, he's not so much a shooter off the dribble, but when he gets those open corner threes with Wall, you could see there's at least a base to build on. So I liked a lot of what I saw out of him. Per our earlier conversation, we still wonder if like you should go on a bigger guy like Portis, who could rebound, who's a little bit more rugged, as opposed to Oubre, sort of wiry like Otto. But when you see how he played in a summer league and how he was especially into it on defense, it at least gives Wizards fans like, oh, well, you know, who knows how Oubre versus Portis will turn out in a couple years, but at least you saw this first step was pretty promising.
Encouraging, and for sure.
Especially for,
encouraging,
yeah,
without
for
a doubt.
15 pick, you know? Yeah. And so I think that was, after the defense being a takeaway, I compared, like we just compared him to Trevor Ariza on defense. I think if his shot develops and he can attack the basket more, because Ariza's shot obviously developed a long way since he came to the league and was barely shooting three-pointers, but he always had trouble with handling the ball and being a slasher. Maybe Oubre can be like the same sort of Trevor Ariza, but also to attack the gaps and with the ball and to get to the basket. So, yeah, the Wizards definitely have something to work with. He's not going to have a lot of pressure, obviously, to play a lot. Maybe he'll get some more time with Dudley being out. I don't think we should, you know, I don't think Wizards fans should be in a panic if he doesn't get a certain amount of minutes his rookie year, because that's just, you know, we saw with Otto, he didn't get a lot of minutes. Later, he developed. Sometimes you just have to watch the game. And so, base.
What I also thought was kind of impressed about his, like, you know, we mentioned about, like, some shitty columnist saying some, like, bullshit, right? What I felt was kind of was encouraging as well is like reading Adam Rubin's reports, and I have not interviewed Kelly Oubre. I've not talked to him yet.
Yeah, to TAI's Adam Rubin, who's been to the last eight summer leagues.
When he interviewed him and some of the quotes, the comments, and you know, make it for your own wall, like make it forever. Like it like this impression, this thing that people are trying to sell him as this fucking bullshit knucklehead or whatever. It just seemed to me like Kelly Ray was like, yo, I need to do this better. Like, it seemed like every time, like, he had, like, an analytical mind where everything that we were saying right now, like, he was like, yeah, I try to do too much here. I need to do this more. I know that, like, you know, I'm learning, I'm young. Like, and I know that sometimes those feel like throwaway quotes, but I always got an impression from whatever Adam wrote above his coverage of the team that there was, like, this perspective from a 19-year-old kid who you have just said that he is just, like, this brash kid, said that he's going to be the best ever, the best thing ever happened to Washington Wizards, and he wore, like, shiny shoes, and he's this cocky guy. And then all of a sudden, when you ask him basketball questions, then he, like, gives you, like, basketball answers.
Yeah.
You know,
nice balance.
You know what I mean? Like, whereas, like, Nick Young would be like, yo, you know, man, that shit.
Someone would say just, like, oh, the shots didn't fall. Yeah, and what nice part about, like, Oubre, he balanced, like, confidence with just, like, saying, like, assessment.
Yeah, of what's happening. And I felt that that was very, for someone so young in coming with his expectations, I felt that that was the thing. Now, you know, like I mentioned in part one, I'm a Hawkeye. I went to the University of Iowa Hawkeyes. We've had a struggle. We've had a struggle for pro players for basketball for a while. Well, B.J. Armstrong, for those wondering, for the Bulls, he's probably number one. Roy Marble.
You mentioned Reggie Evans earlier, and all I can think of, like, he's the guy who grabbed Chris Kamen's nuts a game.
He's still the lead.
He's actually grabbed a lot of guys nuts.
We had a nice run in the 80s of players. Matt Bullard, Brad Lowhouse, Ryan Bowen. I'll go on a list, a bunch of, like, goofy white dudes, but it was a little dark period. So Devin Marble, Roy Marble, and our Magic fans who are not listening, hope he does well as well. So Aaron White gets drafted. Guy from my college. I can't imagine if some guy from Mississippi State.
I'd be all over it.
Yeah, all over it. So he gets drafted. I'm really happy that he got drafted because I didn't think he was going to get drafted. I'm glad the Wizards drafted him. Immediately, the first summer league game, he has two dunks. One was, like, really a badass dunk, and I shared. The best thing is, like, you vined it. I shared it. And I had all these Hawkeyes just retweeting it. And it ended up getting all these views because, like, every single University of Hawkeye person is like, oh yeah, they're so pumped. Kind of disappointed from the rest of his performance for the rest of the summer league. I feel like, but he's like a hustle dude, so he's not going to create his own shot. He needs to maybe work on his 3-point. He's improved a little bit as a shooter outside, but, like, rebounding, his defense obviously needs his strength in defense. I think he needs to improve on NBA level, but I mean, he's a hustle guy. I mean, he can basically run and dunk and jump around, which is really weird to see a white, goofy-looking red-haired dude doing these things, because you don't really see that. Like, you just see, like, the white, goofy red-haired dudes, like, setting screens and kind of being, like, shooting a three. You're like, no, the white, goofy red-haired dude is, like, the athletic guy. Like, kinda, he's like the athletic rebounder tip jam guy.
He's like Birdman without the crazy hair and the tattoos. He's just sort of a ginger who can run the court, get up, and maybe dunk. Get some putback dunks, too.
And maybe shoot. A little bit, and you can shoot a little bit better than Birdman, but that would maybe be his role in the NBA. Now, the Wizards decide immediately right away that they're gonna put him in Europe. He signed in Germany, actually. Top club in Germany. Your thoughts on what you saw from Aaron White? I'm looking through Rose Hawkeye glasses right here, so I want it to work. So, my analysis of him is obviously skewed, but. Where do you see him fitting in with his team, this move to go to Europe? They haven't really done this in a while. They've kind of done the opposite of Europe, where they draft a Eurostash. This is really different to draft a four-year college guy.
Other teams have done that, and this is, I believe, the first time the Wizards have ever drafted like a U.S.-born college guy, you know, not signed him, maintained his rights while, like, you know, that guy signs in Europe and develops. They've drafted other sort of foreign guys who have developed overseas for a bit. I think his athleticism will work in his favor, especially as a guy, if he can gain an NBA range, get that 3-point shot, that combination with athleticism, that, you know, 3-point shot crash into boards is going to be huge. It's like a poor man's Kevin Love or whatever. Maybe he can be better on defense. You know, summer league, he was okay on screening action. You saw like he was in tune to it. He hedged the ball sometimes. I think he just needs to continue to grow into his body, sort of get a little bit more grown-up athleticism out of college, and then make sure, I'm not sure if Europe will be as helpful to his NBA range 3-point shot, since they work with a little bit of a closer line. At least I'm pretty sure that Germany follows the FIBA line that's closer. But I think he just needs to develop that shot. He could be over there 2 or 3 years. And it's just refreshing, again, the fact that the Wizards aren't selling this pick like they did last year, when evidently, like, all the people that, you know, not last year, but 2014, when everyone was, you know, off the board, and they, you know, they didn't have anyone else on the list, apparently. I don't know. And they just sold the pick, and everyone had the, you know, other people in the media were giving the team kudos for selling the pick.
Are you missing Jay Michael?
We don't have to get into the whole kudos. But that is a capture of, like, oh, well, they're, you know, I wish the D League was, you know, wish it were more one-to-one ratio. Right. And if you sent someone down to D League, it didn't take up a roster spot.
Yeah.
This is a nice way to use a second-round pick. Who knows if the second-round picks work out? Some of them do. But this is a nice way to develop them somewhere in a very good league, better than a D League, while not taking up a roster spot. So I think this is the whole Aaron White, how he fits into
flying
being
ginger.
A stretch
flying
four,
ginger
the,
too, by
the
way.
Flying ginger. I think it's a very positive development for the team that, you know, fans have to say, like, okay, this, when we want when you see the team or you think they should go in a certain direction, according to analytics or trends in the league or what have you, this is a sign that the Wizards are actually doing right. So it was a good thing to me, and I think he showed just enough in the summer league. At one point, he may have graded himself and given himself a C, which seems fair.
Yeah.
So he looked
well.
He didn't shoot well, but, you know.
Let me defend him, because I'm biased, obviously.
Okay.
Remember? The point guard play that you mentioned previously was so poor, and he is so determined on point guard play. You know how he lobs that John Wall could throw to him? You know what I mean? It's like when there's some dude who can't even dribble up and down the court. That one dude was so bad. He had like seven turnovers. It was a point guard. It was so bad. Like, he had like seven turnovers. And like, I felt really bad for the dude, because I don't want to hate on him. I'm glad I forgot his name. But it was just like so bad. And then like, you're like, why isn't Aaron White doing more? It's like, dude, they can't even they can't even get into a set. Like, they can't even like do
they
anything.
Struggle.
Like, and like, that's his like thing. Like he's going to do this. He's going to do. You're not going to dump it into Aaron White and expect him to make some move on the block. But what we're going to do is that he's going to be faster than the big that's guarding him, and he's going to run past him, and you're going to throw him the lob, and he's going to dunk, and then he's going to get the rebounds. And, like, that's his strength. And, like, sometimes, like, summer league either, you know, either helps with that strength or shows it its poor if you have poor guard play.
Yeah, just think of being a dual threat of a guy who can run with Wall and maybe dunk, or sort of fade to the corner and leave the lane open for Wall, and you know maybe he gets a three-point opportunity.
Okay, so let me finish on Summer League. I gave this. Does it matter? Does any of this matter?
It matters, of course.
Summer
it matters.
League matter. So like so you know why I'm scoring. So last year when Otto finally showed that he was maybe a decent player, but guess who looked better? Glenn Rice Jr. ends up being the MVP of the whole summer league. Gets in one fight with Randy Whitman, actually, for those listening, on your wedding night against Toronto when the Wizards got smoked in Toronto at the beginning of the season. What's the day?
Oh, November 7th.
Yeah, November 7th. November 7th. His first anniversary is coming in, so Kyle will take presents. And then it was like he said something to him when he got subbed out. He literally never played again. And then they cut him before when his guaranteed contract had to be. And I just feel, after all that, my view and my team to view of Summer League just kind of, like, and I get it because, for all the Baltimore people listening, Josh Selby, I believe, was like the Summer League MVP 1 year.
Yeah, he's like for Memphis 1 year. It was really
and there,
good, yeah.
There's some things of like, so like Summer League is in its context, but like, does it matter? Does any of this matter?
I feel like it doesn't really matter. It's a capture. It doesn't, you know, it matters sometimes. It doesn't matter as much, you know, but it's a capture of what players are doing and it adds up to the big picture. Now, when you mentioned Glenn Rice and he had that one incident, like, that was a little bit visible. There are other like incidents and things with Rice that
behind the scenes,
that we didn't always see. That was more of a capture. Like the Wizards just weren't so like brash and unreasonable just to cut Rice after one thing. I think that was more of a
They
this is what's going
for 2 months
on
after that because they're cheap asses.
Well, yeah, Rice didn't like he signed with the D League team. He never really made it with another NBA team. You know, he had a decent summer league this year, but it's not like at first when the Wizards cut him, we're like, oh, everyone assumed like, oh, the Houston Rockets are going to pick him up. You know, I think it goes to speak that he didn't necessarily make it back to the league. I think he still has some growing up to do. But like that, like everything is sort of a capture, I would say summer league matters. It matters from a lot of different perspectives, not just developing players, but then you're getting some, you're helping develop the game because a lot of the guys you get on your team aren't necessarily going to make it into the NBA, but they're agents from overseas, seeing guys play, and it affects their contracts, getting a good contract somewhere else. It affects maybe the next step in a D League, how you play in a summer league, and who else is looking at you. Like we were talking about earlier before we went on for the second segment, your boy Jared Famous, that was the guy who played well for the Wizards, the Miami Heat inked him into
big
a
guy,
deal.
Right? Big
yeah,
guy.
He was Jared the big Famous. Guy. So I think this is just one of those steps, and it does matter. You can take some things with a grain of salt. You can't make these grand assumptions based off of summer league play, but it all definitely matters.
Now, so you feel that you believe that like Glenn Rice is a bad teammate and he was bad.
No one said he's a bad
negative,
teammate.
Like, once they cut him, there was some negative stuff that Comcast pushed out of the team, which I totally disagree with personally. But maybe I'm not. Obviously, I'm not privy to what's happening in practice in the locker room. And I totally agree with that. But it just seemed to me like a talented dude and you try to save like $400,000 and then they went 2 months before they signed another player, which ends up being Murray, which ends up being Will Bynum, I think, at the end. And then we had dudes hurt. And I felt like, I was like, well, maybe Glenn Rice wasn't the guy or whatever, but like, I don't know. Like, I thought he was at least decent enough to be the 14 to 15 dude on the locker room. Maybe he's just such a jerk that you want him off the team, but like, I don't know. His personality never came across like this.
He's a nice kid. It's more nuanced, and I don't think he was a bad teammate. So other guys liked him. I think there was just certain points where he didn't show enough progression from being a more mature guy. And this is a franchise that has already determined, like, we're going to draw a line in the sand with young guys especially and say, like, you know, we're not going to take the little bit, you know, the slightest slip up. And maybe he, you know, the Wizards looked at sort of a track record of not really maturing, and that's what ultimately led to Rice leaving the team. So I don't want
to,
like...
Am I being unfair to say that I thought they were cheap? Or am I unfair to say that, like, Whitman just didn't like him?
I think that's a little bit unfair. I think we all should agree that it's disappointing that that Rice, who can, you know, maybe has a three-point shot, can sort of bully his way to the basket, cares about defense. It's disappointing that the Wizards weren't able to take that MVP performance in 2014 from the league. 3 months
later, cut the dude?
And you know, put him on a better track. So it doesn't... I don't want to say, like, the franchise is all to blame or Rice is all to blame. You know, this is a whole environment. You know, it takes a village to raise a basketball player, however you want to put it. But I don't want to put it so much on, like, the team, because these are also, you know, sometimes you don't... It's tough.
Why didn't they sign someone right away, then? Why'd they wait? Why'd they wait for someone?
Part of that, I think they're being flexible for trades and different types of things.
Grunfeld loves to have that extra roster spot, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like right now.
He had the 15 and then he had the 14. He loves to have the 14, right?
There's something to wanting just to be flexible, and they thought at this time, Rice just isn't worth investment versus having a roster spot and potentially filling it out with someone, more of a ball handler distributor. For the playoffs, which we all knew they sort of need. You still need to, you know, they traded for Ramon Sessions, and that I think that trade worked out, getting rid of Andre Miller, although we love the professor's time.
Yeah.
But I think that was a part of it, like needing another ball handler. And they knew that Garrett Temples was the more safe utility infielder defensive guy, and Rice just didn't fit in the picture at that point.
Yeah, and then plus they wanted Otto to get burned, and Otto was getting buried anyway, so like where was Rice going to get time
if
Otto was
they were buried, very similar sort of wing positions, so it's like
we haven't mentioned Martell Webster's name yet in this whole podcast, but like, so like he's behind, like he's basically behind Martell Webster as well. So let's we're going to finish this part two out. So the summer comes and we're done with summer league. We're in transition, and we're talking about the signings, Kyle. Can you list the signings?
So yeah, the Wizards, one, they picked up Alan Anderson, and that was a pretty good deal. Like, he, you know, he's sort of a veteran, still has young enough to make some noise. He's progressed a lot with the Nets.
No, keep going.
Over the past couple years, so they get Alan Anderson, Gary Neal. They re-signed Drew Gooden.
Yes.
And yeah, that was, you know, they got Jared Dudley. So here's where we need to take a break.
Hold on. We'll take a break. We'll come right back at you. Blah, blah, blah.